This is Juliette Kayyem with the Security Mom podcast produced by WGBH News. If you haven't noticed, there is an election going on. I've tried to avoid it for as long as possible, at least on the podcast. I will admit I am as obsessed by what's going on in both parties as many people are and watch way too much TV right now. But I did think, you know, it is the elephant in the room, even if I try to focus on issues not political in nature. So today I'm going straight for the jugular and want to address this campaign, the 2016's presidential campaign, and what it means about security. And I couldn't think of anyone better to bring here than my friend Marianne Marsh. Technically, she is a principal at the Dewey Square Group, a Democratic public affairs consulting firm, but many of you will know her from her frequent media appearances throughout the United States in Fox News, local stations, and elsewhere. She has run campaigns, managed campaigns, consult to campaigns, and she is a Democrat, so this podcast will have that feel. So we're going to take a look at what's happening in 2016 as both parties try to figure out who the nominee is. She may say things that you disagree with. She may have expectations about the race that supporters of other candidates might want to holler at her about. But listen closely for what she's saying about how security is playing out in this campaign. It's pretty remarkable, and I think she's unique in tying security not just as the war and national security aspects, but into what's going on with a variety of campaigns and the anger that many people feel about their place in U.S. society. But before that, I do have to ask about the term security mom, of which Marianne Marsh was actually a part of in many respects when it came into our zeitgeist in 2002. It's a demographic. I've described it before on this podcast, and she explains when she first heard it.
Well, I first heard it from Kellyanne Conway, the Republican pollster, who certainly talked about it a lot, and someone I've known for a long, long time, and respect her work a great deal. She's a very good pollster, and she's a very good agenda pollster, and certainly latches on to those kinds of notions. I think it was crucial for George W. Bush and Republicans running to sort of justify the road they decided to travel down, that everybody followed them because they believed them. Because when has the government ever lied to the American people in such epic proportions but for the end of the Vietnam War? So John Kerry's 2004 loss I would not assign to security moms. But I do think it was a smart marketing tool for the Republicans based on the path they decided to travel on national security. So it married up well. But I think now, looking back 12 years later, 14 years later, people say, for what? Why? And so a security mom now, to me, is, again, more along the lines you're examining, is women always want to protect their families. Yeah. They always want to take care of them. And family takes on a large meaning, again, because women are caretakers. They want to take care of their spouse or partner. They want to take care of their kids. They want to take care of their parents. And increasingly, men and women have found themselves unable to do that. Many men, and I've seen this in a lot of focus groups going back many years now, you used to have, if you were married and your husband went out and had a job, he could support the entire family. If your wife wanted to work, well, her job probably didn't pay maybe daycare and didn't really add to the bottom line, but that's okay. She was out of the house. Now they can both work and both work two, three, four, and they're still not making it even. Men feel emasculated, women and feel like they're not doing their role. Women feel like they're not able to do their job and their role. And so everybody feels like they're not succeeding. And again, you look at Donald Trump, whatever you think of him, they see his name on buildings. He says, I'm going to build a building. And they look and there's a building with his name on it. He says, I'm going to fire you on The Apprentice. And he fires them, right? That's more than they've gotten out of Washington. And again, they look at Hillary Clinton the same way. They see someone who has worked her way up the ladder, as many women do, methodically, rung by rung by rung, accomplishment by accomplishment. And they see her there too. I think what the question voters are going to have now is which one of them can really get it done and really change things. And that's what they're looking for desperately.
This idea that Marianne Marsh is describing, whether you agree with her about Trump or Hillary or Sanders or Rubio or Cruz or Kasich, is interesting, right? That's that in this campaign, the national security issue has morphed into the economic security issue, so that when people, candidates, talk about security, they're combining, you know, this sense of vulnerability that we all felt after San Bernardino to the sense of vulnerability that we all feel because we can't seem to pay the bills. And that has a particularly gender aspect to it. Now, I, like most people, hate thinking there's a woman's approach and a men's approach, whatever. We can, that's a different podcast. But nonetheless, the data is pretty clear that women are feeling this need or notion for security much greater than men. Marianne Marsh explains.
What does every woman worry about? Whether they can support themselves and their family. Why? Because most every woman at some point in their life has to support themselves. 50% of all marriages end in divorce. A lot of women end up supporting their parents, themselves, their children, because they're a single mom or out of choice, or they lose a partner, or they decide never to marry. So at some point in every woman's life, you have to economically support yourself. Historically, Democrats have been the better party on that, whether it's the minimum wage, pay equity, making sure that women have the kind of leave they need to be able to work. And on the related issues, every woman wants the best for their kid. And for them, it's still education, still the way up and out. But they see education as increasingly unattainable for their children because it's so expensive. But they know they need it if they're going to be economically successful. They want a better job. They want to move up the economic ladder so they can provide for themselves and their families. And they worry about their ability to retire because women outlive their spouses, outlive their husbands, and they have historically made less money. So every woman fears about being the bag lady who's lost their home, lost everything. And unfortunately, most women and men have experienced that through the Great Recession.
The Great Recession. Right? This is the pivotal moment for so many people who are out there and angry about where America is right now. Now, this comes as a bit of a surprise for a lot of people who viewed 9/11, right, as that pivotal moment. This idea that this national security moment actually defined the way that we would think about politics for generations to come. It didn't. It had an impact in 2002, 2004, certainly in 2008 with the Obama presidency. But today, there's a generation of voters whose moment was the Great Recession. The question of what was going to happen to them, was a future available to them? Were they going to be burdened by debt in ways that made life just too difficult? And they saw what happened to their parents and the fear in their parents' eyes. And that's the pivotal moment. So forget national security and 9/11. Yes, it's there. But in many ways, it's the Great Recession, which is, you know, in some ways, ground zero.
And so now you see younger women and millennials, and you see this with Bernie Sanders and others, the formative years of the millennials and people in their 20s and all that, they grew up listening to their parents who have lost both their jobs. They lost their home. They look at all this and now they're staring down the barrel of six-figure college debt. And they say, I don't want to live the way my parents lived. I don't want to live the life my parents have lived when I was growing up. I want something different and better. And that's now why you start to see the crossover between Democrats and Republicans on economic and security issues, because for women, security is, I want to be able to provide for myself and my family, and I want to be able to protect myself and my family. And those lines are now blurred, not just on national security, but economic security. It's all one together now.
So then if this sort of melding of the notion of economic and national security is really complicated, though, because when you think about economic security, it's very much sticking it to the bad guy and, you know, to the big banks and whatever, where national security, you know, is more complicated because it's war and military and bombings and drones. I would say not exactly that kind of feel good, you know, we're all going to rise together and get our economy moving. How does a voter even think that those two are linked, since they seem to be different styles of leadership, so to speak?
So I think women and voters in general feel that they've been lied to. They were lied to about Iraq and Afghanistan. They were lied to about the recession. We went into two wars we should have never been in and we're still in. And the people who paid the price are the enlisted folks and the Guard. Yeah. And again, many families were ruined by that experience because you had multiple deployments, economic loss, marriages lost, limbs lost, lives lost. And then they also look at, you know, playing by the rules. They pay their taxes. They do all the right things. And they bailed out big banks and they bailed out big corporations. And they're paying for people beneath them as well in public assistance while trying to save their family, trying to provide their family and try to provide for their parents. And yet no one's helping them. So they feel like they've been completely betrayed. And we've had a series of change elections probably for as long as I've been in politics. And now people have had enough of change and they're just looking to radically transform politics in this country. And they're looking for people who can change it and get it done. So when you look at Trump and Sanders, you see the intersection of the issues, especially in economics and different on national security. Yeah. Trump wants to bomb the bejesus out of everybody and have a great military and all this stuff. And Bernie Sanders doesn't want to do any of it. And doesn't want to go to war for any reason. And then the Trump-Clinton part of this is they're looking at Trump and Clinton as people who can get things done. But are they going to get things done the way I want them to get them done? And that's almost a style thing at that point.
I know. A lot of you Bernie Sanders fans and Kasich and Rubio and Cruz fans think that Marianne Marsh is maybe jumping the gun here, talking about Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump all concede that, although I think she's right in at least this assumption, at least as things stand right now. But even taking it back a little bit, I think if you look at what's going on in a lot of the campaign and campaigning now, isn't so much this catering to the security mom, although she's out there, but something I find a little bit more nerve-wracking, which is not the scared woman, right, or the security mom, but it's the angry white man.
I may dub this election fear and loathing because people are fearful and they loathe the political process. And I think for white men in particular, this is their last stand politically, electorally. They feel that they've suffered the biggest losses and they see the demographics coming. So if you are a blue collar worker, a union member, rank and file, work in the trades, they're voting for Donald Trump because they see him as somebody who can create jobs, help them get back on their feet, and stop trade deals and others that have hurt them relentlessly. So men in particular without college degrees, very appealing. Donald Trump's incredibly appealing to them. I hear, and we talked about this a little earlier, you know, I have a lot of women come up to me and they say, I am afraid of Donald Trump, but I don't like Hillary Clinton and can't vote for her, and I'm afraid of him. And so I think that's, both of them are going to have to tackle that. And I think men in particular see, white men in particular see, the changing demographics of this country, where majority minority is really where everyone's moving. It's certainly where the Democratic Party is moving. And they see that in the economy, that they're losing jobs to minorities and illegal immigrants or undocumented immigrants who are willing to work for less and do more work. And so it's a constant eroding of not only their economic standing, but their own personal standing. And that's what's really fueling this election. And even though when Donald Trump does what many of us would look at as the most egregious things, it never hurts him because that trumps, no pun intended, all of it.
And do women find in what you're seeing in the polling and the demographics of Trump supporters going to national security, the tough talk, the torture, all that stuff, maybe I'm being gendered about this, but that would strike me as not very appealing to a lot of women. Are they just ignoring it in their heads, or does he actually have a gender divide of which women just don't like Trump?
I think there's a slice of women who like that, even though many people see it as see Trump as being a bully. Yeah. They like the fact that he will stand up to anybody and anything, the media, other politicians, political correctness, go down the list. No matter what, he's willing to stand up. And they see that. They may not agree with him, but they like that posture because I think they feel that many people, that they and others have constantly been going backwards and no one's been standing up for them. And even when they try to stand up for themselves, it hasn't worked. And that's one of the most important qualities in a president. It's the most personal vote that everybody casts. A lot of people only vote once every 4 years, but they want a president who's going to stand up for them. And so whenever you see a candidate not stand up for themselves, they look at them and say, wow, you're not going to stand up for me. And so For women, it's a tougher needle to thread because if you do look tough and you do stand up, it's the B word, you're a shrew. Yeah. I can go through our Twitter feeds and everything and all the men talk about Hillary Clinton's voice and 40 other things. So it's a very fine balance there. And it's even though she's had the experience as Secretary of State and been in the Situation Room like you and others and was there for the bin Laden call and everything else, it's much easier for a guy.
It may be much easier for a guy, and it may be that we're going to test the theory if Hillary Clinton gets the nomination and goes up against one of the male candidates on the Republican side. What we do know this early on is that women's opinions about security have changed significantly since the Paris attacks late last year and San Bernardino attacks in California at Christmas time. We know that women are showing increased concern about terrorism, much more so than men. Before Paris, for example, in a Wall Street Journal poll, 43% of women said that they were worried or very worried about terrorism. That number shot up to 61% after Paris and San Bernardino. There was no equivalent change for men in that same time period. So there's something going on about women and security and national security that we should just pay attention to in the months ahead. I have no doubt that the general election will not only be about economic security, but that the questions of how we fight ISIS and how we fight terrorism and whether our Cuba policy is right and what's going on in North Korea and whether Israel is a friend or a foe, all of that stuff will play out between whoever the Democrat is and whoever the Republican is. Fear and loathing, security, economic, national security. That is where we are at this moment in time. And I have to ask myself, was there anything that President Obama might have done to change that narrative in terms of who was going to follow him?
You know, we're very data-driven people, right? And if you believe in data and metrics, you look at the numbers and everything has improved economically. More people are back to work. More jobs have been created. More businesses have been started and expanded. Go down the list. The problem is people don't feel it. And that's the disconnect between the numbers and the actual people. And what they feel is cost of living has gone up, 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 but their paycheck has not. The cost of everything has gone up. Taxes, fees, I mean, groceries. The only thing that's come down is gas, really. And so in communications of any sort, you have to bring people with you and you have to meet them where they are. And I think many times there's been no more brilliant communicator than President Obama. But on these things, the economic disconnect, what that people are feeling, I think it's hard for him because he knows with his remaining, it took everything for him not only to stop this country from going into a depression, but getting it back on its feet and creating jobs. To finish the job will take the next president, and that's raising everybody's wages and creating the kinds of good, you know, good jobs at good wages. That's the mantra. And I think so many people in this country work incredibly hard every day, and they're willing to take the extra jobs and not have time with their family to provide for them. But even that hasn't been enough. And they look at that and they look at everyone they're helping and supporting except the people who are nearest and dearest to them. And that's what they resent. Yeah.
Yes, it is a campaign of resentment. It seems a long time ago that we were talking about hope when President Obama took center stage in 2008. Resentment. That is what it's about. And if you're surprised by the rise of Trump, or if you want to explain it by, you know, racism or xenophobia, I mean, all of those explanations are right, but it doesn't cut to the core. I have been publicly anticipating Trump's rise since essentially he got into the race. And it's not because I'm a political genius. It's because on one Sunday in August last summer, my husband and I were driving back from a weekend we got away in New York, and we had just seen Hamilton and been to a wedding, and it was a great weekend. And we were listening to the radio, and they were replaying, maybe it was Meet the Press, one of the morning shows. And for 27 minutes, I was absolutely mesmerized by what he was saying. And I thought, you know, while I was in the car, my God, if I am mesmerized, if I am curious about this guy for 20 plus minutes, there's something there. And there's something that was touching me, and there was something that might have the capacity to touch the American people. It's not pretty, but we can't ignore it. And I say this as a woman because I'm pretty convinced, and certainly the polling suggests, that women do not like Mr. Trump very much. He is unkind to women. He mocks women. His famous tete-a-tete with Fox newscaster Megyn Kelly shows how he feels about women that challenge him on any issue, let alone gender issues. So I've got to believe that even if Trump gets the nomination, I shouldn't be so worried about him becoming president and what that might mean for not just us as a country, but us as the leader of the free world. Unfortunately, I'm probably wrong.
I mean, Trump is virtually every man is going to vote for Donald Trump. And so now Hillary Clinton's faced with having to get literally every woman, which she won't. So because Trump will get a slice of women. So for her, she now has to go get, and this is where you're going to see the traditional party alignment or demographic alignment switch. So you're going to have, again, just like how Massachusetts elects governors mm-hmm. here, that's the coalition that Trump has put together. It's going to be blue collar workers, union members, trades, men with no college or very little college experience. They're going to all vote for him. So literally 70%, almost 70% of men are going to vote for Trump. Hillary Clinton then has to get almost all the independent women and a lot of moderate Republican women, too. Yeah. And that's hard. And all the millennials and millennial women who are with Sanders. So it's a steeper climb for her, frankly, I think, than Trump, who can just keep being Trump and get that chunk of voters.
So this idea that I think people are consoling themselves with that, oh, there's no way he could win a general because there's not enough white men.
There are plenty.
That is true. And we'll see what is going to happen in the months ahead. But certainly thinking about this campaign as merging the traditional national security concerns that make people want government to be, I don't know, tough, and the economic insecurity that is making people want their candidates to be tough, right? And not by the rules and not tactical. Those are now one. And that seems to me to be illuminating for those who are wondering what the heck is going on in this campaign. After Paris and San Bernardino, it seemed for a brief moment that everyone was going to be focused on their homeland security. That's dissipated a little bit. But to what extent do you think the upcoming election, whether it's Sanders, Clinton, Trump, I don't know if any other Republican make it happen, but there's going to be a lot of drama on the political side. To what extent do you think that sense of unease that people were feeling after Paris and certainly San Bernardino might drive a general election?
It's always going to be a factor. And I think what San Bernardino and Paris did was remind everybody of how vulnerable we are. Mm-hmm. I think people are also in the place, however, that they know they can't control that what seems to be random, but they are looking, again, to feel a more sense of security personally and economically. And I think the next president has to have both. Mm-hmm. And I think every voter knows that. And the only thing they're going to debate, because in November, ignore all the general election polls now. They don't matter. But when people are faced with the choice they're going to have in November, Trump, Clinton, probably, that's when they're really going to hone in on it. And everyone agrees on the issues. It's just who they trust most of all to have the solution. And ultimately, how you get elected to any office, and certainly President of the United States, people have to trust you. And if you're going to be the President of the United States, people have to trust you with their whole being. And that's the ultimate referendum.
Yeah, it's not, I mean, as you're talking, I'm thinking it's, you know, not to pick up on the words of this podcast, but it's not just trust, it's security.
It is.
Who are they going to feel secure economically and internationally?
And personally.
Yeah.
Perfect time for your book.
That's Marianne Marsh, a long-term political consultant on the Democratic side, helping the likes of Senator John Kerry and the late, great Ted Kennedy with her take on security moms, gender, economic security, national security, and what we can anticipate in the months ahead on this wild ride as we choose the next president of the United States. And by the way, that book she referenced is my own. It comes out in a few weeks. Check it out on Amazon or barnesandnoble.com, Security Mom, An Unclassified Guide to Protecting Our Homeland and Your Home. Would love your thoughts about this or the podcast, so tweet me at Juliette Kayyem. And this has been a Security Mom podcast.